Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 541 of the Bold and the Brave Her podcast. Yeah, that's right. This is yours, girlfriend. Today, I'm joined by a new BFF all about food and with more street creds than I know what to do with, and that is Dr. Susan Kleiner. Now, we call her Dr. Sue, right, Dr. Sue?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
you're in Google.
Yeah, I know, really, seriously, right? So she is a globally recognized trailblazer in all things nutrition and human performance, and she's well known throughout the industry. She's also written some pretty amazing books, and the books really deal with, they're focused around power eating, which we're going to be hearing about. Now, we're beginning a new year, and we're already stressing, aren't we, girlfriends?
Oh, no.
I just looked at myself. Like, oh. And then you see
my mother in the room. Yes.
I know. It's like, what? I just can't believe it. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. All of a sudden, that's coming out of your mouth. And so it's an issue. So what we're going to do is clear the air about all of this. Now, the reason why I love Dr. Sue, well, there's lots of reasons. But one of them is you all know that you are who you hang out with. And I like people who are evidence-based, who have excellent academic credentials, including in this case, a PhD in nutrition, registered dietitian, as well as the fellow of the American College of Nutrition, no small feat, and a member of the American College's Boards of Medicine, of which I'm on the board, and the National Strength and Conditioning Association. So don't mess with her because she knows what strength is. And I just love that beautiful combination of fitness and nutrition all together. And that's why we're going to ask her some acid questions. Dr. Sue,
Pam,
welcome to the Herb Pad.
I am thrilled to be here. It's so much fun to sort of carry on from years ago. We overlapped and then decades have gone by and here we are again. And both really walking the walk, talking the talk, and staying authentic and true and helping the women around us. So it was exciting to be on the podium with you at Supply Side Global. And I'm thrilled to be here today.
Well, I mean, let's just dive right into it here, okay? Now, I'm going to give you a wonderful woman who has her heart in her hand, and she says, you know something? It's time for a little awakening here. I need to prepare for a life of health and wellness. I want to be able to extend the number of years for my health span, the years of quality living, being able to run up those steps at the Parthenon with the grandchildren when you're traveling and doing your thing. But it's so confusing. I hit TikTok, ruh-roh, they're telling me all kinds of weird things. How about Dr. Google and then Dr. YouTube? And before you know it, you just sit there and you say, well, what the heck? What's going on here? So we're going to start with some basics, some real basics. And I would love for you to take a woman, say she's 50-ish, okay? But for all of you out there at any age, just listen up because we're going to talk basics here. So hit it, Dr. Sue. Where would you start as you look at this person who is eagerly listening?
So you said, I am a registered dietitian. I have been studying nutrition and human performance for 40 plus years and working with individuals. Here's the thing. You need to exercise.
Okay, that was it. We're done with the entire pot. wait a minute. So you got to do some hard things.
Yeah. So here's the thing. As I said, I have counseled people in all walks of life, from elite Olympians to anybody who just wants to enhance their performance, their life, their health span, as we have talked about. And if you would come to me and say, "Doc, could you write a weight loss diet for me?" I'd say, "Do you exercise?" And you'd say, "No, I don't exercise. I don't feel good when I exercise. It's too hard. I don't have time, yada, yada." Then what I would do is prepare a diet for you that you would go on to go off. As Americans, we are experts at going on diets to go off of them. Nutrition plans, whatever you want to call them. We have short time frames when we look at our outcomes. And when we don't see results pretty quickly, we go on to something else. Plus, we don't have self-efficacy, meaning that we don't really believe in ourselves, that we can do something new and be successful at it, because the diet world has taught us that we're broken, especially women. So if you start and you accomplish something that you never thought you would do, exercise. I don't care if it's get a dog and get out and walk your dog, whatever, do it religiously more than 3 times a week for 3 months. I'd say then call me back, because by then both your body and your brain have changed, have successfully accomplished a change that you never thought you would do. It gives you self-efficacy. You believe in yourself. It also physiologically changes you. You now are in an active body, which is more receptive and will actually drive you to want to eat better, to change your nutrition and support this exercise protocol. So, not to mention, when we talk about evidence, there is nothing more profound at promoting health and wellness than regular exercise. So even though I'm the nutritionist here, exercise is a foundational key to successful aging, but as well as successful diet change.
Okay, so that's the beginning. And everyone knows from my consistent and ongoing rants and raves about moving your body that it's absolutely critical and essential to your life to move your body. You do not have to join the Olympics. You don't have to spend thousands at some elite gym. You don't have to live with your trainer, if you even had one. I mean, quite frankly, what it means is you get up and you're active, and then what you do is take it in steps. That walk around the block, that's a start. How about now you hang out there for like 30 minutes instead of 15? And then how about that 45 minutes? And when you say walk your dog, one of the most famous quotes I ever got from a Boston cardiologist was, walk your dog, even if you don't have one.
Right.
and so it's like, okay, you're out there with a little empty leash and everything and people are pointing at you. But here's the gig. You got to move your body, girlfriends. Don't give me this stuff about how it's messing up your hair and that you have to sweat, okay? Because you know something? No, I'm not going to that place with you. You have to do this to take care of yourself and then just work around it. Nothing in the world feels as good as getting out there and having a nice, clean sweat. I love it.
Yep.
And that's so terribly important.
And I don't think anybody ever said, I wish I didn't do that workout.
Exactly. Like, who took a walk in the park and said, that was the worst experience of my entire life? No, grow up. Now, come on now. Now, the next thing you add to it is strength training, of course. Why? Because over the course of time and the aging process, your muscles are changing, your body composition is changing, and you've got to have a foundation of strength, which is going to carry you all the way through 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. That's what you're going to do. Okay? So talk to us about strength training.
Oh, man, do I love strength training. So, yeah, I'm a power lifter. But we don't have to put labels on it, but that is the style of lifting that I do. It's a recognized sort of protocol. And I do certain kinds of lifts. And then in order to benefit from that, I have to fuel my body. So here's the thing about women. We have been taught that exercise is the way we lose weight. And so if we always think about losing weight and exercise, then the idea of eating less and exercise even sounds better. It is the worst thing you can do. If you want a healthy, long life, however long that may be, but you want to be able to take trips and walk around and see what you want to see, if you want to be able to carry your groceries from the grocery store into the car, back to the house and put the cans back up on the shelf, if you want to be enjoying your life and participating, then having strong muscles leading to strong bones is essential. And in order to maintain those muscles and maintain your bone, you've got to feed them. And so there is a concept that I talk about, never underfuel your training. So many of you may be on calorie restricted diets. I mean, a lot of people are overweight, and a lot of people more than ever are trying to lose some of that extra fat. And that's good. Plan your restriction around another time in the day, not before you exercise. If you go into exercise fasting, you don't get the greatest bang for your buck from that exercise session. You will burn some calories. You won't burn as many calories as you could have if you had fueled yourself well beforehand. That's the dirty secret of all this training fasted. You also won't reach the intensity where we're learning you actually get the benefit from exercise, the health benefit. You have to exercise hard enough so that it impacts those energy manufacturing plants in your body called mitochondria that we're trying to hang on to and take care of. And if you don't exercise enough at a high enough intensity, it can be a short exercise session at a very high intensity. It could be a longer exercise session at a more moderate intensity. It could be multiple times during the day. And of course, they call that exercise snacking, which I don't know why everything has to do with food in our world, but
I have no comment.
But the intensity matters. And the funny thing about exercising fasted is that you perceive that you're exercising as hard as you can at a very high intensity. But if we measure the actual energy output, the watts that you create during that exercise, they are lower. So your rate of perceived exertion on a scale of 1 to 10 may be an 8. But if we measure the energy you're using, it's at a 5 or a 6. So eating fasted does not get you where you want to go when it comes to health span. And so what should you eat beforehand? Well, we're learning all kinds of things about women these days, one little study at a time, and they're starting to accumulate. So we had data that said calories are important before exercise. Have a combination of carbohydrate and protein. That is a really good starting point, and something, the timing and the volume depends on your own stomach. Like, what can you handle? You have to experiment. Can I have a bowl of yogurt and fruit? Can I have a bowl of cereal and milk? Do I need to have something that's really compact, a small smoothie or something where I know it's going to empty from my stomach quickly and I can get out on whatever I'm going to go do for my exercise? But lately, the most recent data shows that protein has become more important for women around exercise.
All right. So what I do, to give you an example of this, of what you just said, is that I'll have an Icelandic yogurt, and it's got some fat in it. It's great, right? It's got healthy fat. and it'll give me 15 grams of protein right off the bat. Then I add on top of it walnuts, which gives me a little bit, a skosh more protein. And I'm very happy with that. And then, of course, I have coffee, my cappuccino. All right. And all of that takes place about an hour before-ish. Why? Because if I'm lifting, I mean, I'm doing core work, right? I don't want to be trying to exert myself and feel like I need to upchuck here. I don't want a bunch of stuff in my stomach, but I want to feel satisfied. I've also done protein shakes. And a small amount. I mean, it's not like a huge jug of this stuff. Because again, I want it to be out of there mostly by the time I start lifting and doing my thing. And that's true if I'm even just doing endurance per se. Now, for the longest time, I know you heard it too, women would say, I leave my protein till later in the day. Okay, which makes me, I don't know, scream. So if you're going to get the amount of protein that you need, which we're going to talk about right now, all spread out throughout the day, there's none of this having a granola bar in the morning and then flakes of iceberg lettuce for lunch. And then all of a sudden you get slammed with half a cow for dinner. I mean, this is not the way we do this. It's got to be spread out throughout the rest of the day because, quite frankly, the kidney can't handle it. The body cannot. It can only process a certain amount of protein. I think for a woman, it's max 30 grams all at one time-ish.
Well, we're starting to understand where is that limitation physiologically.
Right.
And especially as we age, there's something called anabolic resistance.
That's correct.
Right. And so the data aren't showing so much that you're going to damage your kidney, your heart on the kidney to process the protein. It's that you don't get the benefit of the protein. Now, of course, 60, 80 grams of protein at once is not going to be great. But the data, we don't have much data on older
Let's
women.
Define anabolic resistance.
Anabolic resistance means that the ability to process the protein into tissue is not as available inside the cell. So the actual, what we call muscle protein synthesis, anabolic means building. And really, that's what a sports nutritionist is all about, is about how much can we build and how much can we push back on the body's tearing itself down. Right? So catabolism, we call that. So we want to be, even as we age, it may take longer, we may be slower, but we can build our body all the way until we die. And so you and I talked about the fact that over the last 4 years, I have gone from osteopenia to healthy bones because I focused very hard on my diet and back to powerlifting. And so through that, it took time for me to rebuild my bones, but it didn't happen in 6 months. Wouldn't have been seen if I was part of a 6-month study, but we can do that. And so anabolic resistance is something we must recognize. And if we only have one big slug of protein during the day, we won't get the benefit of all that protein utilized by our body. We'll get the calories, but we won't get the protein building benefit. And so that's why we like small, frequent protein packages throughout the day. Typically, depending on your size, there's kind of this round number that I like to use with women of around 100 grams a day. So that means if you have 5 meals a day, 20 grams of protein each time. If you have 4 meals a day, well, you can have a little more. You're going to do 25 grams of protein each time. Or you can have snacks and meals, and some is 15 and some is 30, and you kind of hit that 100 gram number. It's a hard number for most women to hit, frankly.
It's a very hard number. It's an interesting thing. I have found, just when I've calculated what a typical woman, again, non-elite athlete and all the rest, just a wonderful woman out there in the her podcast land, is consuming in terms of protein. I mean, it's like 50 grams,
right.
It's 60 grams. If they're lucky, it's 60 grams. They usually do the happy dance if they get anywhere near 80 grams. But 100 grams is like, it's Mission Impossible, but we know it's the Holy Grail. And I also think that the grand majority of women are not aware of where protein hangs out. In other words, what are you eating? So then they go down another rabbit hole. It's called protein bars. Okay, hit me up with protein bars, Susan.
Well, I have to say, I am not a fan of bars. I think they taste terrible. I don't think of them as food, but occasionally we do need something quick and easy. I prefer making a protein shake with an isolated or a concentrated protein, plant or animal-based. In fact, sometimes I like a plant-based protein because if we are omnivores and we eat a lot of animal protein, variety is one of the foundational keys of good nutrition. And so maybe a plant protein is a good choice.
Use a pea protein.
Yeah. And we've gotten so much better at them. They're no longer necessarily, if yours is gritty, then try another one because are much better ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some really good ones out there now. I like to change it up too.
So protein bars, if we think about what is all the conversation about nutrition in our food supply, it's about ultra processed foods right now, right? And while it is not like a full on holistic category that we should take out of our diet, because certainly any protein supplement is an ultra processed food. We couldn't develop that in our kitchen. The processing of most bars is pretty high. And very often they have a lot of sugar in them and other ingredients that maybe we...
artificial sweeteners that are not great.
Right. So I prefer to think ahead. Food prep is a real thing and it really helps.
No, wait a minute. Stop. You mean you have to get fresh food and you have to actually prep it for the week? Stop. That's like so much work, right?
Yeah. So get a chef and have them live in your house. And
I know. Kidnap one. You know, throw them in the backyard and just say, hey, fix breakfast now. But protein comes in all kinds of different sizes and resources. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Sue all about what power eating is about, since it's her books, and how we fashion meals throughout the day with power eating. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. Okay, Dr. Sue, power eating. We're talking about protein. We're talking about spreading the wealth throughout the day. What is power eating?
Well, the concept really is, how do we maximize what our bodies can do? Again, women are told to shrink and disappear. Frankly, get skinnier, get sexier, and just shrink and disappear. Power eating is about maximizing what we can do, taking up space, being as strong and powerful as we can be. And we are really a lot to contend with when we are well fed. And so
feed me.
Yeah. So the concept is, it started with people asking me, okay, I'm supposed to eat nuts and seeds and fruit and beans and grains and eggs and fish and berries. And how do I get all that in a day? And so I decided to do the work that I do with my clients and put it in a book. And there are two books. There's the New Power Eating, but there's also a book that may be a little harder to find that I wrote in 2007 called The Good Mood Diet. And that was kind of power eating light, because power eating was based on kind of a caloric concept for athletes, whereas the Good Mood Diet is for everybody else. All my athletes saying, can you write a book for my partner or my mom or my kids or whoever? And so that's where that came from. And so number one, I want people to think about how food makes them feel. Get back in touch with how food makes you feel. Don't think about my body is big, my head isn't attached, whatever you're thinking of. How does food make you feel? That is a very important guide to selecting the foods that are good for you. But then in each meal, we also understand that macronutrients work really well together. Instead of saying, well, this is my high protein meal and this is my carb meal and then I get to have my fat. No, eat them together. They work in concert with each other. They help you manage your carbohydrate metabolism. In other words, glucose control in your body is maintained better when you have fiber, which comes from plant foods connected to the high carbohydrate foods, even your proteins. You are feeding your gut biome in a way that you are enhancing both the nutritional side, but also what we call anti-inflammaging. So inflammation, it goes from your gut systemically. And so we want all of this good nutrition together. So breakfast, you get up in the morning, and if you are a breakfast eater or the first meal of your day, something that combines good protein. Don't forget about eggs.
Eggs are the best. Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry the price has gone up, but still, pound for pound, when you're buying a protein-rich product, eggs are still a good deal. Not to mention, eat the egg yolk. Do not dump the egg yolk. And on the other hand, don't start dumping the whites. In the egg yolk is a super important B vitamin called choline. It comes in the form of phosphatidylcholine in an egg. I know I'm getting very sciencey, but that nutrient by itself helps with brain function. It helps with neuroconnections. It is half of the most abundant neurotransmitter in your body, acetylcholine. In your brain, it allows the phosphatidylcholine allows for neurons in your brain cells to stay clean, for toxins to go out and nutrients to pass in. It is a vital nutrient that is low in our diets of Americans across the board because we're not eating much egg yolks. And so eat an egg, eat a whole egg, eat two. You can eat three. There isn't a study ever done to show that in healthy individuals, egg yolks raise cholesterol levels. So there's even studies, one was done here, I'm in Seattle at the Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center, that showed that three egg yolks a day in healthy people did not raise cholesterol levels. So if you're concerned, talk to your physician, absolutely. But at least add an egg yolk or two a day. So now we've got an egg. At some point during the day, breakfast is an easy time when we have the most control over what we eat. Have a bowl of whole grain cereal. That could be oatmeal. It could be puffed rice, puffed wheat. It could be a whole grain bread. You could have a whole cooked rice. You could have all kinds of things. Get a whole grain in. Get those nuts and seeds in at that time. It's not a lot, like a teaspoon. Just a little bit, sprinkle it over the top. And then certainly, I'm an advocate of dairy. If you are lactose intolerant, use a lactase-treated milk or a lactase replacement enzyme. If you can't drink milk, now it's rich in protein, rich in all those bone-building minerals, rich in with a carbohydrate source, lactose, that helps you absorb calcium. And it has vitamin D. I mean, it's like the ideal bone product to eat. maybe you're a yogurt person, maybe you're it's an alternative source, but getting in something with all of that nutrition, and then of course some fruit or vegetables, fruit and vegetables.
You know what I love? I love cottage cheese.
Oh yes.
And cottage cheese is like easily 13 grams for just half a cup or so. And it's like, I just scoop it right out of the damn container and throw
it. And the last dose, you can eat it right out of the container.
Oh, yeah. And I actually throw in some dill weed because I love the taste of dill weed on my cottage cheese. It's just me, ladies. And I have some strange taste. But I mean, talk about quick and easy. It's like I just dive in there and do our thing. Cheese is another one in general. And again, I think a lot of people were running away from cheese because they were worried about that whole cholesterol thing and the rest of it. And again, in moderation, you could get great protein from a cheese source. And there's so many different cheeses. Hummus is another one.
Exactly. You know? Get in your beans. Absolutely. I mean, there's no reason that you can't be vegan, except you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's a tricky one, to say the least. It's never been attractive to me. But on the other hand, I'm cool. I'm basically flexitarian. So one day I'm this, and then I'm trying that, and I'm messing around. Yep. Why? Because I'm a rebel. I'm like, don't be sticking me in some silo where, you know, all I hear is you can't have that. You know, it's like, no, go away and leave me alone. I want to have what I want
for breakfast. Right. You can have fish for breakfast. You can have,
you can have cereal for dinner. Like the rules are all different now. Whatever works, works. And I have omelets for dinner sometimes. It's the only thing I have time for. And I just whip it up. And between you and me, I do 3 to 4 egg omelets. Excellent. So that I can make sure to get 20 grams of protein in. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Throw in whatever vegetables I still have sitting around in the fridge. And next thing you know, boom, it's all done. You move it along and get it rocking again. I mean, there's lots of ways to do this. And I think that what's most important, really, at the end of the day, is there's nothing fancy and weird about what we're talking about. It is basic eating. It is that four-letter word, cook, and taking control of the kind of food you have. You started this whole thing out with this, what is your relationship with food? And that's reminiscent, Dr. Sue, of something that I've had to work with for many years. And, you know, my last book was the whole book on food and addiction. And it is so many women have a frankly tortured relationship with food. It's the enemy. It's the thing that made me not be able to get into my genes. But I understand. I am thoroughly empathetic and compassionate because we've all had that moment where you're like, I'm never eating again. Food is the problem. Food is the enemy. No, you need to take a breath and just say, what feels fantastic right about now? Could it be having some absolutely amazing blueberries? Could it be slicing up some cantaloupe? Could it be certain vegetables that just get you going that have always been favorites of yours? What is it? And then realize that what you're actually doing as a woman is, and we care give anything that comes within 100 feet of us. We don't even have to know the person or anything. What we're actually doing is nourishing our body and really, quite frankly, our spirit. Speak to that.
Yeah. So my experience as I put together the Good Mood Diet, I actually did a local sort of pilot research study that along with the now defunct Seattle Post-Intelligencer, which was a local morning newspaper. And we called for people who felt depressed, not clinically diagnosed as depressed, but who felt sad, to write an essay in. And the editor would select a half a dozen people to then participate in trying out this nutrition program that I had developed for 3 months during the dark days in Seattle from January 1st to March 31st. And they had no contact with me. And the point was that it's unfair for me to write a book that I say works for people when I've been handholding and counseling my own clients. And now I'm sending you a book and you have no access to me. So it was no access to me. Here's the information. And what we discovered, and it's very much what we talked about, getting in the nutrients all together, getting in the big variety of food, focusing on fish and eggs and nuts and seeds and the proper fibers and all of that. And foods that have been identified to affect your mental health and brain function. So at the end, what we learned is that despite the fact that I wrote a nutrition plan focused on mood and how you feel, everyone lost weight. And it wasn't a weight loss diet. It wasn't meant to be a weight loss diet. But as people started to feel better, and one thing was they had permission. In fact, it was part of their role to eat everything that was in the plan. And it took away the sense of guilt or, I don't know, whatever it was, their bad feelings about food, because now food was going to make them feel better. It was about how they felt, not what they weighed. They actually stopped going to food choices that were about comfort, about really typically sabotaging themselves and their goals. All of that kind of thing kind of fell away. And as they felt better, they exercised more. As they felt better, they de-stressed. I have no clinical labs on these people, but all across the board lost weight. I mean, it was jaw-dropping. And then we went back a year later because I said, if I'm going to publish this book, I know everyone who loses weight gains it all back. I don't want to publish it if that's all it is. And they had all either gone off and gone back on the diet or stuck with it. And they all had maintained most of their weight loss. It was astounding to me. And so our relationship with food, as women in particular, we are people who nourish. We do spend time in the kitchen preparing food for others. And then we quickly eat while we're there, and we don't think about, and we don't sit down, maybe even eat with our family, which is such an important part of creating the sort of neural network that nourishes us in our own minds around the people who we love and care for. That becomes so critical. And so nourishing ourselves, taking care of ourselves, along with the people who we love and care for, is an essential part of feeling better. When you feel better and you can decrease your stress, your body responds. People who go through very stressful times typically respond in one of two ways. They eat more or they eat less. Sometimes you don't even recognize that you're doing either one, especially the eat more. But what we find is people on weight loss diets or calorie restricted diets during stressful periods don't lose weight, even eating the same food, as well as they do when they're not stressed.
Well, they have a pro-inflammatory state throughout exactly. Their entire body. That's what was in my book, The Hunger Fix.
Exactly, exactly.
I think people who are overeating, as I always like to tell them, I said, so which anesthetic are we going to use today? What you're doing is numbing yourself.
Right.
And for the 3 seconds of what you call maybe some level of pleasure, but it comes and goes in about no time at all. And then there you are with this little mess. So is, I think one of the most important messages here is as we're looking at the new year coming up, and I'm into every single day of your life is another opportunity to reset. So I don't really, as it were, do a lot of the resolution stuff because we all know the science, and within a period of 2 months, everything goes to hell anyway. So I would rather look at every single day as an opportunity to hit the reboot and reset. But what's also interesting is there are people in a subset who actually do that January 1st thing, whatever, and they actually do incredibly well. They're a very interesting group that's been studied rather thoroughly, but the mass majority of people really don't have a game plan. It's like, I want to buy a house. All right, well, do we have a real estate agent? Do we even need a real estate agent? Do you know how to hop onto all of these marketplaces out there? Blah, blah, blah. So there's an entire strategy that goes on if you're going to successfully buy that house. And we don't even blink. We say, oh, well, of course that's what you do. Same thing with buying a car. Would you just like walk in and grab the first car sitting there? No, there's vetting, due diligence, all this stuff. Well, what do you think we're doing now? This is vetting and due diligence. You have to sit down, take some time, and pull together a strategy. Now, just for grins, you need to know that this is a dynamic process so that what works 1 month maybe a little funkadelic the next month for all kinds of reasons. Maybe you've changed up your exercise program and now you have to level up with some of the way that you eat and back and forth. It just goes on like this. It's a dynamic process, which is why I'm a huge fan of working with a professional like Dr. Sue, because then you have someone to check in with, someone you're accountable to, someone who could help guide you and navigate the troubling waters of craziness out there with how people think that they're supposed to eat or not. So you need to have an A team. Don't you have an A team for your health when you have the nurses, the doctors, and other people who take care of you? Sure. Do you have an A team for maintenance of your house? Sure you do. Well, you need an A team here too, because this is the extraordinary body that's going to cart you through decades of life. And you need to be able to do that M word, maintain, maintenance, like the little car maintenance thing just popped up on my dashboard the other day. It said, maintenance, it's time for maintenance. Well, where's the little dashboard for you and me? We need maintenance, you know, and we're always resetting. Aging throughout life, whether you're 10 or you're 90, it's a dynamic process.
Right.
You got to swing with it. Go ahead, Sue.
Yeah. So the process is what's key, right? Having a process, like you're saying, having a plan. You don't get to a PhD or an MD without a plan. Where do I start? What's the path? How do I get there? You're talking a financial plan, auto maintenance plan. So we also need a plan for nutrition or food. That plan rests on, can we change habits? And we typically do best when we try to change habits one at a time. I've always had those clients who were AAA type personalities that would just chuck it all and do everything all at once.
You talking They're about me rare. Again?
They're pretty rare, but changing one thing at a time, how do you do that? And that you're saying like 2 months after your resolution, it's down the drain. Well, how do you avoid that trap? Having a plan and a structure and a process. So what
And a low-hanging fruit.
And
low-hanging
fruit.
Go for the easiest thing you could possibly do where you'd have to say to yourself, it's ludicrous that I can't walk, right, you know, for 30 minutes in my neighborhood.
I had a client that said to me, I want to start walking. And the time that I cognitively understand I've got is after dinner. I'd like to go out for a walk. But every time I decide I'm going to go for a walk, I look at the dirty dishes and I go, no, I have to do the dishes first. And then by the time I do the dishes, I'm tired, I'm exhausted. I take the Häagen-Dazs out of the freezer and I sit down and watch TV. And I said, okay, what is the last thing you do when you finish your dinner? And she said, well, I always have tea at the end of dinner. And I said, okay. And you need to zero in on exactly the moment that you want to create change. Said, you're going to put down your cup of tea. You're going to get up. You're going to have your sneakers right by your chair. You're going to put your sneakers on and you're going to walk out the door. If the dishes are done later, nothing changes.
Nobody died.
No, but if you don't walk, there are
somebody will die.
Right? Yeah. So I said, so then I had a chart for her. And you have to write down exactly the steps before you're going to do the thing. This is research that was done by the Ministry of Health from Great Britain. And they found that this kind of thinking is essential to changing habits. Identifying the moment before, what happens before you're actually going to do the thing that you want to change. And so that's what she did. She knew when I put down my cup of tea, I put on my sneakers and I go out for a walk. And every day she checked it off. And we know that if you can do that for, I can't remember how, you may remember how many days, I think it's 18 days straight, you have created new pathways in your brain.
And then you just go with it.
And the habit is established. And if you miss a day or two, you just get back on the wagon, because that is more ingrained than the old habit. The old pathway is filling in and the new pathway is becoming more ingrained.
And you know that it's becoming ingrained because if you don't do it, you don't feel right. It's something is like off.
Exactly.
I had a guy who worked for the Washington Post. He was one of their biggest journalists. And he had put on a goodly amount of weight, because what he would do is he would just work right through dinner time at the Post and then come home and eat super late. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
And what he would do is he would go into the garage, and there were two doors. One door went to one part of the house. The other one was the kitchen, right? So he did all the wrong things, right? So he went right through that door to the kitchen and he was just chowing down and packing on more weight. So we had a little come to heaven session. I set up a little tent and a little sermon and everything. And I just said, look, here's the way this is going to roll. You want to be a big fancy journalist at the Post? Fine. You're eating at the damn Post. They have a perfectly fine restaurant there, and just grab some dinner, or radical thought, bring something with you. But you're going to be done with it no later than 7:30, period. End of story. Then when you cruise out of there at 9 off times, because he's got these deadlines and
right,
all the stuff right that he's got. And I said, this is what you're going to do. You're going to park in the garage. You're going to take the other door, the one that completely avoids the kitchen, because that's in one wing of the house, and off. I'm telling you, just those two things. He had a habit now. He had it established. And after a while, he laughed every time he saw the door to the kitchen. He was like, no, that's never happening. And I'm telling you, this guy dropped weight like a lead balloon. It was pretty amazing. And he said, I just didn't understand the power of habit. Well, listen, power, huh? Power food, and we got the power eating, everything from you. I could talk to you forever. So you have been officially appointed a repeat offender on the Her podcast, which she said, we're going to be drawing upon that extraordinary mind of yours to help us with all things nutrition from here on out. Okay, how's that sound?
That is great. I love that.
I'm adding you to my posse, okay? Because, I mean, this is just the coolest thing ever. And I can't thank you enough for being on the Her podcast. How can people learn more about your work and how to find your books, et cetera?
Well, I do have a website, and it is drskleiner.com, drskleiner.com. Dr. Sue Kleiner was taken, believe it or not, by some psychologist in San Diego.
I hate it when they do that. and then they wanted $600,000,
right, exactly,
you know, to buy the link. You're like, no.
And people think it's Doctors Kleiner. That's okay too. That's what it looks like. So I'm under @PowerEat on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn.
And we'll have all of that with this episode so that you can easily access her. And again, Dr. Susan Kleiner, Dr. Sue to everyone else out there in the universe, I can't thank you enough. On behalf of the Her podcast community, this was just so cool. And I know people were taking lots of notes.
No, we have so much more we can talk about. Pam, thank you
so much
for having
me.
We will.
And everyone in the new year is just going to be saying, okay, strategy, habits. Oh, and I also want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. Scope it all out at Solaray, SOLARAY.com. Now take a moment, leave us a review because we'd love to hear from you. And you should all know that this is a production of Podcast Health. And I just got one little thing for you. Remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you could do with that time are not. So get on out there and carpe diem, seize the day, every one of you. And thanks for listening.